champagne pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, and welcome to the free agency frenzy, or is it, edition of Cleveland Browns Daily.
In the National Football League.
In the National Football League's free agency frenzy, not for the Cleveland Browns. What we know as of now is that Alex Mack is close to reaching a deal with the Falcons. We know that Travis Benjamin has reached a deal to go to the San Diego Chargers and be their speedster opposite Keenan Allen with Phil Rivers. So certainly wish Travis nothing but the best and a great opportunity for him.
And conflicting reports
about Mitchell Schwartz. Yes. First, Mary Kay Cabot, and we'll have her at 2 o'clock for the very latest on that. Mary Kay Cabot was saying that she heard that it was close, 7.5 a year, which, as I've said all along, I want to keep Mitchell Schwartz. 8 was my ceiling for him. That's under the ceiling, so I like it. Then Mike Silver said, no, there he's not coming back to the Browns. Then Pro Football Talk just reporting that the Browns have pulled their offer to Mitchell Schwartz, although it may be posturing. Again, I never expected, as we got here to this point, and I know people are seemingly very frustrated if my Twitter is any indication, I didn't expect any of the four guys to come back. We said that. Now, I think it is possible from what I've heard around the league is that there was a rich market for Travis Benjamin, and he took advantage of that. There's a rich market for Alex Mack. The reason that Mitchell Schwartz and the Browns are maybe back in play for one another is that Mitchell Schwartz did not find the money out on the market that he thought. Those numbers that Joel Corey was talking about.
That $9.5 million, $10 million.
Pipe dream. Not happening out there. Also am hearing from my sources around the league that Tashawn Gibson has no market out there.
Wow.
That there is very little buzz on him, that he was not considered even the top, one of the top three safeties, free safeties on the market. He was ranked behind, significantly behind, Eric Weddle, Reggie Nelson, and Rashawn McCloud, who just signed the big deal with the Philadelphia Eagles, 5 years, 37. Now, I also heard he was behind George Iloka, who just signed for 5 years, 30, to stay with Cincinnati. So, again, coming into it, I didn't expect the Browns were going to keep any of the four. I always ranked them number one, Mitchell Schwartz, on my priority. It sounds like the money might be in the right area, so hopefully they can get that done. Now, if they can't, they are going to go ahead and move on. We'll see what happens there, but it sounds like the markets for Schwartz and Gibson make it possible. We never thought Mack was coming back. Travis Benjamin was going to get a lot of money, and he did. You saw some of the contracts going out. Chris Ivory over six a year to be the number two running back for the Jags seems
crazy.
A little bit crazy to me, or to at least work in tandem there with TJ Yeldon. And then Marvin Jones got $8 million a year from the Detroit Lions. That's why he's not here. That's too rich. And to me, that was pretty much an egregious-looking contract as far as I'm concerned. When you think about the production Marvin Jones has had in his career, to get $8 million a year is a lot. Now, maybe I have to get my head around the new money and the new salaries with the new cap and everything, but for Marvin Jones to get that kind of money really is staggering.
And how much of that comes out of a desperate nature to replace the production that you're losing in Calvin Johnson?
I think a lot. I mean, Marvin Jones is basically parlaying 10 touchdowns in 2013 into a massive deal. Did he have a good year last year? Sure. 65 catches, 816 yards, 4 touchdowns. But are those groundbreaking numbers? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not groundbreaking. And the guy's going to get $8 million a year. Golden Tate, who had a much more accomplished resume in a less pass-happy offense, signed with this very same Detroit Lions team for about six a year a couple years ago. And that's when he was coming off of, what, 898 yards, 5 touchdowns?
In Seattle.
Similar numbers,
yeah.
In Seattle, fewer opportunities. He has now parlayed that into success there with Detroit. But he was working opposite Calvin Johnson. All of a sudden, you have two number twos and no real number one for Matt Stafford there. I thought that was a very surprising contract. The guys that I wanted, some of the names that I put out there when we went through this exercise, only one of them is really off the board. And that one is Ladarius Green. I wanted Ladarius Green.
But is he off the board?
I think he's going to the Steelers. That's what it sounds like, which to me is a double gut punch right there. Because you look at that team now. Le'Veon Bell in the backfield, Bennett quarterback. At wide receiver, you got Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Marcus Wheaton. They re-signed Darius Heyward-Bey, who has speed. And now you bring in a tight end who's 6'6 and runs a 4.44 40. I mean, good God, the speed for them is going to be
and
just outrageous.
While you lose reliability in Heath Miller, you gain a lot in Ladarius Green.
You do. Totally different guys.
Totally different guys. The sooner he can adapt to the way Big Ben runs that offense, that speed will be a factor. You know, Heath was a little bit more like Jason Witten playing with Romo, a lot of body control underneath, yards after the catch, tough yards, but he wasn't stretching the field by any means. Now, on any given play, you could run four verticals and not have to be in a four wide receiver set.
You're going to put him right there.
You flex him out. You're going to have him on a nickel or a dime or a will linebacker in a walk position chasing him down.
And they can't match up. They saw it when he went down the seam against
us. I remember doing
touchdown.
It against Vernon Davis. Vernon Davis ran 4.3, 4.42. It's just, I'm fast, and I've got a head start. When the ball's going to them and they're going, they're gone.
They are gone, yes. So Mike Silver saying, I'm told the Browns had an offer on the table for right tackle Mitchell Schwartz and pulled it. The source is close to Schwartz. I have no idea what to make of that. I have no explanation for that. I'm not privy to those things, so I don't know. If you want to keep him, and it sounded like the number was right, I say you keep him. And if you don't, then maybe that's what you're doing. So who knows? Keith Britton says, what are they doing exactly to Mike Silver? Mike Silver's response to that is, great question, in all capitals. I would have liked to see Mitchell Schwartz here. I'm sure you guys are. Judging by my Twitter, we're going to have a lot of fun phone calls today. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. And we will certainly get you that info. You know, we'll take your calls. We'll hear what you have to say. We'll let you know. Again, I never expected the Browns to make a big splash in free agency. I said if there was one guy I wanted back, it would be Mac. It sounds like he's gone to the market and has not found the 9.5, 9.75 that was being talked about. So he sounds reasonably priced. Do you want him at a reasonable price? Yes, I certainly would take him. I don't know what's going to happen there as well, you know, and we'll see there.
You're talking about Schwartz, right?
Talking about Mitchell.
Okay, because you said Mac.
Oh, no. Mac is gone. I expected Mac to be gone.
Right.
Mac's in his 30s. That's what it is. Michael Silver says, said a Browns player regarding the team pulling its offer for right tackle Mitchell Schwartz, quote, I'm as confused as anyone. Well, so are we. And again, this is for all the people who think I have inside information and I know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I'll be the first one to say it. I have no idea. I'm along for the ride with you. Again, not expecting anything big splashes. That's why I like Ladarius Green. Not a big splash type of a guy.
Is he going to get the Dwayne Allen money?
What?
Is he going to get the type of money that Allen got to stay in Indy? Ladarius Green?
No, he's not going to get that kind of money.
Not
no
for Pittsburgh. They don't spend that anyway.
They don't spend that, and he's not. He doesn't have the resume. I mean, this is a guy that much like
but
your
did
boy.
Allen really either.
Dwayne Allen a couple years ago had a very good season.
Okay,
2 years ago had a very good season. He reminds me. You know, Ladarius Green reminds me of. I'll give a San Diego comparison. Michael Turner, a guy that was incredibly talented.
Yeah.
Playing behind a first ballot Hall of Famer, had opportunities, flashed in those opportunities. Good athlete, and now he's going to get an opportunity, I think, to do more than he was given. That's the kind of free agency that I wanted, or free agent type of profile that I wanted for the Browns.
Correct.
A guy who was good, who was cheap, who was
projects
underutilized
very well.
And projects to have a bigger
and
opportunity.
In some cases, I mean, if you're Ladarius Green's agent, you sign a 2 or 3 year deal for good money, right? Change of scenery with opportunities, and then get him a third contract, which could be another three to five-year deal for the real big money if he lives up to the hype.
Right, and that's what you're looking for. But what's the plan going to be? I don't know. We're all kind of in a wait-and-see mode here as well on CBD. Now, what we do have for you is Mary Kay Cabot at 2 o'clock. We hope to have a national person for you. I know that it's being efforted by our own Jason Gibbs. And we're also going to have a very interesting discussion about quarterbacks. And, you know, I cite all those stats. Remember when we had that interceptable passes discussion?
Yes.
So there's a guy in Ireland, I believe. Gibbs, do you know how to say his name? Have you talked to him?
I have not talked to him.
All right. It's I think it's either Cian or Sean, but it's C-I-A-N. But the actor who's in Game of Thrones is Cian Hands. So we'll find, when you talk to him, let us know exactly how to pronounce it. But anyway, this guy on Twitter, I follow him at C-I-A-N-A-F. He basically took 3 months of his life and charted every single pass of every single quarterback in the NFL and produced this unbelievable manuscript documenting it, documenting all the stats, documenting all of the things that he came up, interceptable passes, you know, anything you could imagine he came up with. And this book, I've been reading it, is eye-opening. It's unbelievable. Charted by him, the whole thing. And by the way, the one quarterback, I'm sure you guys will all be funny, you think it'll be interesting here, that he thinks is maybe the worst quarterback like ever was our former quarterback. He is not a huge fan of his, but it's something that we'll go
through.
Which one
of our former quarterbacks?
The one who went to the Texans.
Okay.
And so we'll go through it. We'll talk to him about this stuff. I mean, he charts literally everything. It was a labor of love. It's an opus. I'll post the link later today. He goes through each quarterback, charts, and you have a chart of their heat map for every single guy, every pass, which were interceptable, lost yards, attempts per fill. I mean, he comes up with all this. It's fascinating to read on every quarterback in the NFL. So we're going to talk to him at 1:30. He's also looked at the quarterbacks coming out of college this year. Doesn't love any of them at all. Doesn't love any of them, but says that Goff is the best. But in his mind, best of the least. That's how he sees it. So,
Jalen Ramsey.
We will talk to him at 1:30. Again, Mary Kay Cabot at 2 o'clock. All right, we're going to take our first break. We're going to try to see, you know, what's going on here. If there's any new in news, we'll keep you posted as it comes through right now. But the latest is that reports have the Browns pulling their offer to Mitchell Schwartz. Again, the Browns pulling their offer to Mitchell Schwartz. That is what the latest is there. Alex Mack to Atlanta, not a surprise, reunites with Kyle Shanahan. Travis Benjamin to San Diego, where he can go with Keenan Allen, Phillip Rivers, Antonio Gates, and a much more pass-friendly offense. We'll see. That's good for him, and I'm very happy for Travis Benjamin. So that's the latest on the Browns. No signings yet. Again, not to be this is
no
not
surprise.
Unexpected. Right. This is not unexpected.
We've had those national analysts on this show prior to today.
Saying the same thing. Yes, indeed. All right. We will come back. Segment 2 of CBD Today.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, 216-578-0850. Peter King saying ex-Cleveland center Alex Mack will average $9.5 million per year in Atlanta, making him the highest paid center in the National Football League. Could have made $500,000 more on average in Cleveland. Atlanta offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan, a factor for Mack. Natural fit in the zone scheme,
sure,
where he played his best.
Absolutely. He played his best, and I think what it does for a I don't want to say undersized, but an athletic, semi-undersized, cerebral player like Alex Mack is, that zone scheme makes a lot of sense for him. He doesn't have to take on a nose tackle head-on and get you know, mauled or bull-rushed. It's going to put him on a track, and he's going to use his body control and athleticism to his advantage, which we saw him do in Kyle Shanahan's system here in Cleveland.
Yes, we certainly did.
Good riddance.
You know, it is what it is. I mean, he was a productive player. It certainly didn't translate to victories, and he's getting paid. He's at his age. I just didn't see it happening here. Now, based on Peter King's tweet, it sounds like that maybe we did make an offer to him and he took less money to leave.
Yeah, you're right.
So, who knows?
Well, I mean, with Carolina being as good as they are, New Orleans still has Drew Brees, and they're in a rebuilding mode around him, but he's going to sign an extension. Is it a foregone conclusion that Atlanta's going to be that good in that division?
It certainly
is not. You got Julio Jones. You got Devontae Freeman. You got Matt Ryan.
Yes. Yes, you have some good skill position players. Now, then again, you had Roddy White crush Kyle Shanahan on the way out of there. They still have issues on the defensive side of the football. But they do have Desmond Trufant, who's a good player.
Yeah.
Vic Beasley, they drafted, good player. So That's a division, though. You've got to get through Carolina.
Yep.
Who's getting Kelvin Benjamin back. That's not going to be easy to do. Nope.
Just sign Mike Tolbert again.
Sign Mike Tolbert. They've got to get Josh Norman done, but they've got him on the franchise, so they've got some time. They've got some time there. Interesting. It'll be interesting to see, but that's a big signing. Now, listen, you've got Matt Ryan, and your biggest problem down in Atlanta has been the offensive line. You've stabilized that with an anchor in the middle with Alex Mack. So I think it makes sense. He played his best football in that system. I think it's a fit that makes sense on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It does.
216-578.
Make your money, bro.
Yes. 216-578-0850. Aditi saying on Twitter, not overpaying, put a premium on young talent that hasn't yet peaked. Isn't that Moneyball? Hashtag Browns. Yeah, that's why. And Paul DePodesta is here. You certainly could see that, and we expected it. I think when people, take a step back, you hear the stuff about Mitchell Schwartz. That makes it interesting. But in reality, this is what they said they were going to do. Now, everybody's saying they talked about wanting to retain their own. The Browns do want to retain their own. They're not going to overpay for him. Travis Benjamin fled for greener pastures in terms of a better fit, I'm sure, system-wise for him.
Has there been any link out there for money-wise for Travis Benjamin?
No,
if Marvin Jones set the template at 8, I would suspect 6-ish for Travis Benjamin, which is still a lot of money.
I would say, 6, maybe even north of 6. If Marvin Jones got 8, Travis Benjamin should not be far behind.
True.
Should not be far behind. Gibbs, you are our man of the people. What are your thoughts? Is anything that's happening right now surprising you? Are you getting angry? What are your thoughts these days?
I at least thought we'd get a wide receiver here today.
It's not done, though.
Correct. But I like Marvin Jones.
I don't like you. Do you like him at $8 million a year? I don't. Not even close.
What do you want to spend the money on?
I think I want to spend the money when it's time to, actually spend the money and have it matter.
Okay, but you still got to have someone to suit up this year.
Well, yeah, you do. You have a lot of draft picks. You still have money that you can spend, I'd say, judicially. Look, I want a Ladarius Green, but if you told me we came out of this and we signed restricted free agent Jaren Brown from Arizona, who I like a lot, and we signed Rishard Matthews, or just one of those two, I would feel very good about it. And
okay,
what's
the market going to bear for those guys?
For who? Jaren Brown's a restricted free agent, so he'd be incredibly cheap. That's a gamble. Rishard Matthews is going to be significantly cheaper than Marvin Jones.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean,
and I like him better, to be honest. I don't think Marvin Jones. You're going to remember a lot of these deals and contracts that you look back on. You end up thinking those weren't actually very good deals. I think that you'll look back at that Marvin Jones at $8 million plus as not being a great deal.
I guess the biggest thing I'm trying to figure out, and maybe it's just speculation. Maybe Michael Silver, who called the Browns liars a few weeks ago,
which he was wrong
the journalistic guru that he is. I don't know. I mean, maybe he's wrong, and the Browns haven't rescinded their offer to Mitchell Schwartz. But why are you rescinding offers? What's going on? Like, Alex Mack going to Atlanta? Okay, fine. Guy wanted to play with Kyle Shanahan. He had his best year under Kyle Shanahan. Can't argue that. Okay, Travis Benjamin. Yep. I want to know what Travis Benjamin's getting from San Diego.
Yeah.
That one, I felt like
– When you went – let me ask you a
question. Talk big names in free agency
– Sure.
I didn't think his deal would be one of the first ones that we would talk about today. And the first thing on Twitter this morning, Travis Benjamin to San Diego, I'm like, that's just out of nowhere.
When you went to sleep last night, did you expect the Browns to keep any of the four guys, and did you expect the Browns to sign anybody?
I was hoping they would at least keep one.
Uh-huh.
I thought there was a chance for Mitchell Schwartz based on what I was reading and hearing last night.
According to Bill Barnwell, Chargers are giving Benjamin more than $6 million per year. He gave that a C- as a free agent signing grade. Bill Barnwell from ESPN.
I'm seeing something. Someone on Twitter just texted me. I don't know if this is true or not, though. Matthews going to the Patriots?
I saw that on Twitter, too. There haven't been any rumors, and that wouldn't surprise me. That would be a great signing by the Patriots. Rishard Matthews is a good player.
Yeah.
I like him better than Marvin Jones.
Okay, so who are we going to get?
By the way, just think about it, too, from this perspective. If you didn't make the big money play for Marvin Jones and Hugh Jackson is your head coach, what does that say?
Yeah. You're right. I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, if Hugh Jackson came in here and pounded the table and wanted Marvin Jones that bad, I think we would have gone after Marvin Jones much harder.
What about Sanu?
Sanu is considered to be more of a gadget. I prefer Rishard Matthews. Maybe nothing happens off of the people that I like, but that's who I wanted. Was of all these receivers, I would have rather had Rishard Matthews.
And again, we're still just a little under 3 hours away from the start of free agency.
It hasn't even started yet.
Correct. There's things we can, you know, there's things that can go down, things that could happen. You know, it looks like two of the guys are gone. I'm interested to see what happens with Tashawn Gibson based on our conversation in segment one there. You know, if you could get Gip back, okay. I would be fine with that.
Yeah, and there's apparently not a lot of
– You said Iloka got 30?
5 years, 30. There's not a lot. There isn't supposedly a big market from him, talking to my NFL sources. Not a big market for Tashawn Gibson. So maybe it's possible he comes back. I mean, you know, maybe he left money here on the table. Maybe he's bitter now. I don't know. I don't know what the case will be. But I did not expect when I went to bed last night, and I've been saying it for weeks, so I know that people are trying to say that I'm changing things around. I've been saying it for a long time. I don't expect, did not expect any of the four guys to be back. And I did not expect the Browns to sign anybody today. So this is, to me, not anything that I expect.
And you're the all-knowing.
I'm not all-knowing. This is not what this is exactly what I expected. People are definitely very, 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 very unhappy with
it. But who are we really truly going to make a run at that's going to make a difference in this upcoming season?
Nobody.
Nobody.
That's why you got to be smart.
Look at Randy Starks, no longer a Cleveland Brown. Rob Hausler, no longer a Cleveland Brown. Josh McCown, in a transition phase as a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. Brian Hartline, had a good season, some ups and downs in year one. Dwayne Bowe, I mean, these are the things that we were hyping to all hype level last year. In the second tier,
oh my God. Yeah.
of free agency,
and those
last
were all
year.
Cuts. Those guys were all old, and right. They were all cuts.
Correct.
I'd rather get a couple younger guys and not old cut guys this year. It is interesting. Again, this is not unexpected. So far, all we've known about this regime is that they got the number one head coach on the market and the guy that they wanted in Hugh Jackson. Other than that, they haven't done anything they didn't say they were going to do. We will see what happens. And I know that there are years and years and years of failures, but this is what I said on Twitter today, and I totally believe this to be true, okay? Everybody who is upset about everything that's going on or what's not going on today, all that matters really, the Browns never said they were going to be major players. In fact, they said we will not be major players in free agency. All that matters is drafting the right quarterback this offseason. Their plan is clearly not to spend money. People are saying they don't have a plan. They do have a plan. They're going to purge this roster. They're not going to bring in those high-priced guys. As people look at it and remember, you know, you've got, what, the dream team of the Eagles, where they signed all the great free agents, did not work. Washington Redskins, for years and years, signed all the free agents under Dan Snyder, didn't work. Miami has won free agency how many years in a row now?
Jacksonville, last year?
They don't go
year?
To the playoffs. There's a lot to get in, and I understand people want people to just spend money, and I get it. They have all this money. What's it for? That's something that they will answer. I can't answer that for you. I do think they want to do it in a certain way, and that's why they brought in Paul DePodesta, and that's why Sashi's in charge. We have to let it play out over time. All right, when we come back, we will be joined by the quarterback guru, probably the only person that can say they've charted every throw of every quarterback in the National Football League last year. He will join us right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Very excited to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in a man who has done extensive research on the quarterback position, and somebody, and I certainly would recommend you guys going out and getting his pre-snap reads quarterback catalog. You can follow him on Twitter at CIANAF. Kian Fahey joining us for from across the pond. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So how did you come to the point where you decided to embark upon this labor of love, charting every throw of every quarterback in the National Football League?
I think it probably all can start with the rise of PFF and just people showing you that you can do that kind of a thing, because my issue was I always talked to people who talked about numbers, people who tracked different things, and there were certain aspects of the quarterback position that I wanted to talk about, but whenever I would get into a conversation, they would say, oh, you don't have numbers for that, or you can't track that, you can't offer me any evidence of that. So eventually I got frustrated enough to the point that I said, right, let's go through all the throws, let's get the numbers, let's get all the evidence to back it up. So when someone says to me, Brian Hoyer is a good quarterback because the Browns won 6 or 7 games in over the first half of the season, I can come back and say Brian Hoyer is a bad quarterback because he threw 25 interceptable passes over that 20 and only 3 or 4 were caught, something like that. That's a hypothetical, obviously. But that's the motivation for it. And I think so far the way it's been received, people have appreciated it well. So I think it was a good idea in the end.
And how, just walk us through, we'll get back into, you know, your breakdowns of the quarterback position, but just walk us through you know, your fascination with the NFL game, how it started, and has a lot of it been because of Roger Goodell's, you know, true plan to bring the NFL over there on a consistent basis to the likes of potentially having a franchise based there in the London area in the coming years as well?
No, he came a lot longer after me. I've been following it for over a decade now because I had uncles who moved to America, and when they used to come home at Christmas, the best thing was getting to stay up late when you're 10 or 11 years of age and watch a game that's going on till 4 a.m. But I've been following it since Brett Favre was there in Green Bay, and it's just, to me, I don't know what the fascination is. I probably can't explain it. I probably don't need to explain it, really, because you all know, you're all fascinated with the sport. I'm sure all your listeners are as well. But I think the main thing that's different to sports over here you can have 4 or 5 teams that want to win the same league, win the same sport every single year. And for me, I think the NFL, you see it every offseason, every single franchise is optimistic. Every single fan base is optimistic because they've seen how players can change the teams. They've seen how teams can go from being terrible to being good and how they can transition. Even every year, gradually, like the Seahawks, it took them probably 3 or 4 years to actually win the Super Bowl, even though we kind of focus on the year itself. But that whole process itself can be fascinating to me.
When you went through this, and as we said, you charted every single quarterback throw. And if you guys want to follow him for insights just on the NFL, because you know the league very, very well, I appreciate all the takes you seem to have on free agency as well. It's at CIANAF, and he will give you tons of good information. Now, what stood out to you when you went through this and did these studies of quarterbacks? What's something that really surprised you about the quarterbacks?
I think the thing that surprised me most was actually how bad Matthew Stafford was. I've never been a big fan of Matthew Stafford. I think he gets hyped up a bit because of what he did a few years ago. I think that Calvin Johnson impact is huge. I think he generally skates by for a lot of his bad plays, a lot of his bad decisions. But over the first half of the season, he was horrendously bad, making just terrible decisions, making awful throws, and it all just got shifted onto his offensive coordinator. And that was helped even more because they started winning after they changed their offensive coordinator, and the idea is the new offensive coordinator got the most out of him, set him up for success. But that's not really what happened, because I bought into that myself during the season a little bit, because you tend to do that more during the season when you've got more to do, you've got less time to actually sit down and watch these things. But when I went back to look at it, it wasn't so much they were putting him in a better position to succeed, that they were hiding him more by relying on screens, relying on more simpler designs, relying on the running backs and tight ends more. I think Theo Riddick caught over 80 passes, and that's just a reflection of how they were simplifying the offense, because he couldn't throw in anticipation downfield or throw into tight windows. They had to protect him. So it's not about propping up Stafford. It was about masking Stafford and relying on those weapons around him.
So when you went through this, because one of the things that, you know, we talk about a lot is how do you want your quarterback to win? Going through this, were there certain traits that you found in the quarterbacks that you considered to be the best through your study about how they won, whether it be the ability to go through progressions, process information quickly, be accurate at certain levels, win from the pocket? What came out of there as being the biggest link to consistent, good quarterback play in the National Football League?
I think reacting to pressure is the main thing. Because no matter how good your offensive line is, no matter how many talented players you have, no matter how much you invest in it, eventually the quarterback's going to be put under pressure. And I, the best example I have is Derek Carr. Over the first 8 or 9 weeks of the season, he was really good, and the offense around him looked unstoppable because no one could get near Carr in the pocket, and they couldn't cover Amari Cooper, they couldn't cover Michael Crabtree. But over the second half of the season, teams could start getting closer to Carr because Donald Penn at left tackle struggled a little bit more. Rodney Hudson at center was injured and was dealing with health issues while he was playing as well. And the overall quality of his protection dropped off. And then you saw that Carr completely, well, maybe not completely fell apart, but sorry, a bit harsh, but his level of play went from being unstoppable to being throwing interceptions, to running into sacks, to missing open receivers he should have hit simply because there was that much more pressure. And that's just using Carr as an example. But in general, pressure will determine how effective an offense can be, because in anything you do, if you're asked to do it in 10 minutes, if you have 10 minutes to sit down and break down a play, or if you have 3 seconds to sit down and break down a play and you know you're going to get hit, it's obviously easier to do it when you've got loads of time. So, and because that's inevitable, it matters for every single quarterback, no matter what kind of scheme he's doing, no matter what kind of players around him he's playing with.
Two veteran quarterbacks that could potentially find new homes this offseason, one possibly via trade in Colin Kaepernick, another in RG3, who was just most recently released by the Washington Redskins. Do you feel in your analyzation of the quarterback position in general that either of these two young men could regain some of the success they've had early in their career in a change of venue?
I think both could. I think they're very different quarterbacks. We have a tendency to lump all these guys who can run together and call them all similar quarterbacks, but they're not really similar. Griffin's a lot smarter than Kaepernick, but Kaepernick's a better athlete. Maybe he wasn't initially, but at this stage, with Griffin's body weight broken down, he's definitely a better athlete. So you have to, if you want to get the most out of Kaepernick, you have to treat him like the way Greg Roman treated Tyrod Taylor. And that's what Jim Harbaugh used to do. He did it in his final season. He changed their offense, but you have to put him in an offense where you're relying on the run mostly. You're simplifying his reads, going to half-field reads, going to throwing off a play action, getting him in bootlegs, getting him out of the pocket because he can't manage the pocket. He doesn't have subtle feet, and he can't really make reads on the field when he has to come off his first receiver or come away from one side of the field. So if you put him in a situation where he has a good offensive line and a good running game, he has all the arm talent, he has all the athleticism, he can still be a decent starter. Griffin's got more questions because he's been sidelined for so long, you don't really know what he is. But even at his lowest point, when you saw guys like Chris Cooley highlighting how he had 4 or 5 receivers open at a time, he was still doing the things he did as a rookie, still doing them well. So when he was put in an offense that was, again, kind of simpler, more play action, more he could throw from the pocket, but he needed to have 2 or 3 route combinations that worked from specific ones rather than asking him to drop back, throw on timing, break down the defense. He never really got a chance to develop in a second scheme because once they moved away from Shanahan's offense, he got injured again. He broke his ankle, I believe it was after. Actually, it was the very first game. So I have a little bit of hope for Griffin, but obviously you can't really buy into either guy heavily. It's going to be low-value contracts who are kind of once-off guys. Actually, I think it's fascinating because I'm talking to guys who are with the Browns. I think he'd be a fascinating landing spot for Griffin because Hugh Jackson knows what to do with a quarterback. He knows how to play to their strengths. He will adjust his offense, and that's what Griffin needs.
Certainly does. Talking with Kian Fahey, who has charted the throws of every single quarterback in the NFL last season. So I got to ask you, one guy, when you go through all of your categories, who actually graded out pretty well for you, it seems, in certain respects, was Josh McCown, who played for the Browns last season. What did you think of his performance?
I think he was better this year than he was last year, but I think that might be part of the offense around him. Last year, he was interception prone and bad. He made a lot of bad decisions. I don't think he had a lot of interceptions, but he had a lot of interceptable passes and a couple of highlight plays that were really awful. But this year, he was a little bit better taking care of the ball. He tends to drop his eyes a little bit too quickly, like I said, when you were talking about reacting to pressure. But he's also a kind of a decent athlete. He's not going to run the ball a huge amount, but he can escape, and he will get his eyes back upfield, and he can create plays. I mean, he created 1 or 2 fairly impressive touchdowns last year. I think the Browns did a pretty good job of masking his deficiencies, though. One of the things I track is simple yak completions, which is basically completions that where the ball didn't travel further than 2 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
he was third in percentage of those. So that means he's taking less risks, but he doesn't actually have to take risks because the way the plays are designed. I remember against the Ravens, he threw for a huge amount of yards. He had one big bomb in that game downfield, but a lot of those yards came on those types of plays where he didn't actually have to do too much.
When you started Johnny Manziel and you know about his off-field issues, is that juice worth the squeeze for any team in the National Football League?
I talk about Manziel quite a bit, and I think people focus on the off-field stuff. And I tend to avoid the off-field stuff because I'm not there. I can't judge. I don't know what's happening. At this point, it's probably overwhelming that Johnny has issues off the field because there are so many things have happened. But on the field, I wasn't impressed with him. I wasn't a big fan of him coming out, the main reason being that he wasn't a refined quarterback. He's a guy who relied on his athleticism in college, but that athleticism wasn't high enough to be good against NFL-caliber athletes. So when he played this year, I thought you saw flashes. I probably would have played him ahead of McCown just because he's that much younger and he had the chance to develop. But overall, he wasn't taking care of the football. He was running out of clean pockets. He was dropping his eyes against pressure. And I think he had his worst game of the season was his final game of the year, which it's not something I usually buy into, but with young quarterbacks, you want to see them get better the more they play rather than get worse.
Sure. Kian, when you look at the guys coming out of the draft, I know that you don't have anybody that you are thrilled with in there, but who would you take at the number two if you were the Browns and you were taking a quarterback at that spot?
If you forced me to take one, it would probably be Jared Goff. I think he's probably shown the most out of all the quarterbacks who are available. I know Wentz is an easy guy to like for a lot of people because he's a big arm and he throws the ball really hard and he can make some really impressive throws. But Wentz, to me, is kind of a guy who locks onto his first read, doesn't really show his ability to manipulate the pocket, doesn't really show his ability to throw against pressure. He actually reminded me a lot, watching him, of A.J. McCarron, not in terms of skill set, because they are different players. One's got a much stronger arm, obviously.
Sure.
But the way the games were played for McCarron when he was at Alabama was he could have loads of space in the pocket and his receivers were getting wide open because Alabama were that good. They had that much better talent. At the level Wentz was playing, the caliber of his team looked a lot better than the guys he was playing against.
I agree. It's hard to watch his film because you don't know. The guys are just so open, and his first read is typically so open.
Yeah, I know some people will discount that completely, but that's massively important to me because I want to see quarterbacks play against pressure. I want to see them fit the ball into tight windows. I don't want to just presume that they'll be able to do it when they get to the next level.
Who of the young guys that you charted do you think is going to be the next great NFL quarterback?
Oh, great is always a heavy word, isn't it?
Or good, or somebody that you think can lead. We'll even keep it to the 2014 draft. Out of like the Teddy, Carr, Bortles group, who do you think is most likely to lead their team to a Super Bowl?
I think the Raiders are going in the right direction. I do like Carr. I think I was not a fan of him after his rookie year. I wasn't a big fan of him coming out, but I thought he played relatively well last year. He showed he was making better decisions. His feet were better. But I'm still kind of locked into the Bridgewater. And I know a lot of people have jumped off Bridgewater because of his production last year. This comes back to the offensive line and the pressure issues. That offensive line is horrendous. He was regularly turning around and had two or three players in his face. And then you look at his receivers couldn't get open. So you're kind of looking at him going, okay, he didn't throw many touchdowns, he didn't throw many yards, but what could he do? He didn't have many options. And they're after signing Alex Boone today to be the left guard. That's going to be a huge improvement. They're getting Phil Lodeholtz back. I think that will improve him a lot as well. And they should draft. I'm hoping they'll draft someone like Josh Dotson just because it'll be interesting to see him with a receiver who can go up and win the ball. I'm still probably a big fan of Bridgewater over Carr, but I think both of those guys are pretty good. I'm less inclined to say Bortles is going to be great. He's just a bit too reckless for me.
He's still very erratic, right? He still did things last year, and I know his numbers were gaudy, but when I watched him on tape, he still made some throws that just boggled your mind and some decisions that boggled your mind.
Well, one of the things I did in this project, and I can actually just check it for you right now, is go through every throw and not assign completion percentage, but rather assign an accuracy percentage. So it was about where the ball was placed. Obviously, it's more subjective than completion percentage because the ball isn't just caught or dropped or incomplete. So there is some subjectivity to it, but I tried to keep it uniform. I had specific rules to follow that, so it wasn't just about me picking out players that I liked or me reacting if I was having a bad day or something like that. And Bortles was in the bottom five of accuracy percentage, despite throwing to two freak wide receivers in Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson. So there are major concerns there for me.
Kian, this is great stuff. I've had a tremendous time reading it and going through the throw-by-throw breakdowns. You have the heat charts for every throw made by a quarterback. You invented stats, the interceptable passes, which we talked about, which Jason Gibbs, our producer, last year took umbrage with when we used it as a reason why the Browns were better off without Brian Hoyer. But now that you're here, I bet he will be much more favorable about it. But people can follow you at CIANAF on Twitter. Great football information. And tell them where they can get your unbelievable pre-snap reads quarterback catalog for 2016.
Well, it's actually, the website is presnapreads.com, but you can find the link directly to it in my bio on Twitter.
All right, give them a follow. I've tweeted it out on mine. Kian, it was great to have you, and I certainly, as a person who loves to watch the quarterback position and understand it as best I can as an amateur, this resource that you've produced is invaluable, and I think people will learn a lot and be surprised about a lot of the things that they do learn about the quarterback position, the play, and certainly their own quarterbacks as they get educated and read it. So I want to thank you for all your hard work, because I can only imagine how much time you must have spent on this.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure.
All right. Kian Fahey. Again, check him out on Twitter at CIANAF. Follow him. Check out his pre-snap reads quarterback catalog. It's unbelievable stuff. Alex Mack, it seems official, going to the Atlanta Falcons. When we come back, we will take your phone calls. Interesting stat tweeted out by Daryl Ryder. The Browns 22-79 in the 101 games played by Alex Mack. Again, interesting. Now, Ian Rapoport saying that the Browns were in on the bidding for him, but I think we're overstating the impact of this loss right now. All right, that'll do it for us here. We'll come back with your phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Gibbs, what do you have to say about interceptable passes now?
I don't know. I'm trying to get the bus off the top of me.
What?
You threw me under the bus. Trying to get out from underneath it. My friends enjoyed that, though.
Did they?
Oh, yeah.
Listen, if I really was going to throw you under the bus, I would have said what you really were saying at that time about people that would come up with passes like interceptable stats.
And where they lived.
And where they lived and what they did with their time.
Sounded like you might have been in a basement.
He was in Ireland.
I know.
I mean, it's pretty crazy.
It was great.
That maybe the
nice
only
guy.
Person who's done this in the world isn't even in America. It's an awesome thing, and really I would urge people to check it out and read it just to educate. I learned a lot about quarterback play and what you see versus, you know, what you – people who just read basic stats and read, like, the box scores, this tells you – this paints the picture for you, and I think it really is fascinating. Each quarterback has its own write-up on him for his whole season, so you really can learn a lot about these guys. I thought it was very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Let's go ahead and go to Tom in California. Tom.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Hey,
I got a quick question. The other day, we were talking, well, we've talked several times, I should say, about the quick release of elite quarterbacks. And then there was also an interesting stat that you had, Nathan, which had a lot of the worst-rated offensive lines.
Yeah, from Pro Football Focus last year, the worst pass-blocking lines in the league. Four of the five
that,
went to the playoffs and one won the Super Bowl.
Don't you think that there's probably something amiss with how they're grading those offensive lines? If I mean, is it like time to pass or something? I mean, what are they
No, they're
just
looking at how many times those guys don't block well or whatever. The key is, though, if you can get the ball out quick enough, people aren't going to get to you. So you can make up
sure.
for poor line play by having a quarterback that knows where to go with the ball and can throw the football accurately and on time before the pass rush can get there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, it just seemed like an obviously negative correlation, and I thought maybe there was some bias in the way that they're actually doing the stats. But
no, they do it. They grade each individual player. I mean, again, and I'm not saying it's a perfect thing, but the criteria applied by Pro Football Focus is the same to everybody.
Yeah,
so
okay.
They
developed their own standard.
Right, so based on their standard, that's what it is. The time to throw is just something that anybody could do with a stopwatch at home. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
So that's the correlation between those.
Well, I knew that Alex Mack took off, and everybody's been having hand-wringing about all the things in the offensive line. We had whatever number four by Pro Football Focus, but what has it gotten us, right? So
that's the thing. What has it gotten us? You know, Max 22-79. Is that all on Alex Mack? No. Is he a very good player? Yes. I think that when you bring in a guy like DePodesta, he's going to evaluate what positions lead to victories. Now, if it is true, the Browns made a good offer, so you can't be mad at them for going there. It's called free agency for a reason, and he was able to not want
to
be here.
Free to go where he wanted
to. And he wanted to go to Atlanta. Fine city. Sure. I went to spend my college years in Atlanta. I love Atlanta. All right, appreciate the call very much. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Dan in Hershey, welcome.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Back when Pettine was fired, I called in, and I just was really sad at that time. I mean, that was a dark day for me as a Browns fan, you know. You kind of contemplate, wow, do I really want to hang in there? And I'm naturally an optimistic guy, and my optimism is back, which I'm happy to say, you know.
And why is that specifically?
Well, at that time, one of the comments I made was I really thought the Browns needed to be more like our division rivals and conduct themselves and look for a quality organization similar to the Steelers, the Ravens, which are my Browns that I grew up rooting for, or in this case, the Bengals. The Bengals have really built a talented team. And
letting, by the way, a lot of people leave. Iloka is so far the only guy that stayed there, and they're not getting killed, are they? I mean, but then again, they've been to five straight playoffs, but they've had continuity. That's what the Browns need.
Well, this brings me to my first point. Do the Steelers, Ravens, or Bengals make a big splash in free agency?
No.
No, they don't. So, Browns fans, we got to get used to a different way of doing things. And it's going to be hard. You know, we're used to getting up for this big signing, you know, this guy. And then he doesn't pan out, and we don't really go anywhere, and we start all over again. So these guys, you know, come on, everybody, calm down. We're kind of doing it the right way for the first time in a long time. And we're going to wait this out, and maybe they'll target one guy, you know, a young guy. Maybe Olivier Vernon, who knows, you know. But so I think that's good. And the thing that's really got my optimism up is where we're sitting at number two in the draft. You know, I was down at that time because I thought, oh, no, here we got another year where we're picking high and there's really no quarterback to pick. Well, my optimism is up because there's obviously two guys and it's kind of a coin flip as to which one's better. So sitting at number two, we're going to get one of them, you know.
Yep.
And the biggest thing is we got Hugh Jackson now. My goodness, we got a great coach. You know, this guy and the staff is seasoned people. They really know what they're doing. So the if they don't pick a quarterback at number two, well, I got to trust that they don't think they're as good as taking a Jalen Ramsey or a Joey Bosa or a Laremy Tunsil or, you know, the other blue chip I think they're talking about is a guy named Miles Jack, you know, take one of those four guys, you know. So we're going to get somebody great there, and I think we'll pick a quarterback. I personally like Goff. I like the fact he's younger. I like the fact he's played higher competition. I like the fact he's played a lot more games in college. I like his accuracy. But the thing that I really liked and I saw on tape, and I was really glad to hear this guy talk about this, is he could hang in there and throw an accurate ball with somebody getting ready to clock him upside the head.
Yeah, and he got clocked upside the head quite a bit in Cal. Thank you very much for that phone call. Got an interesting tweet from TK Wilson. And top six teams in unrestricted free agent spending over the last 10 years. Any guesses? I have the top six, okay? Any guesses on those teams? Anyone?
I'm looking at it, so I don't count.
Okay, go ahead.
I think I've seen it. Okay, Browns, okay. Dolphins.
Okay, Dolphins are number one, $629 million. Their winning percentage, 41%. Okay, Browns, yes, they're sixth, $500 million, 31%.
Giants?
Nope.
Okay, Jaguars.
Yes, they're second, $611 million, 36% winning percentage.
Forget the other two.
Redskins.
Redskins, yeah, I was going to
say $534 million, they're fourth, 39% winning percentage. The Bucks are fifth at $511, and they have a 36% winning percentage. The only team on this list that has a winning percentage is the Philadelphia Eagles, $607 million, and they have a 55% winning percentage over that time. So Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report says multiple agents echoing criticism that Browns are being extremely hesitant in negotiations. Now, if there's one thing that Sasha you would think would be very good at is contract negotiations, yes, given that that's what he did. So that's the word that's out there around the NFL, according to Jason Cole, right, for the Bleacher Report. We've got Mary Kay Cabot now ready to go from Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Good. Well. Mary Kay, what is the latest that you are hearing right now about the two guys still out there, Mitchell Schwartz and Tashawn Gibson? We'll start with Schwartz because you said it was possible he was back. Other reports saying he's gone now that the offer is being pulled. What's going on?
You know what? It's a jungle out here, I'll tell you that much. It's really tough to try to figure out what exactly is going on. But here's what I know about Schwartz. As of last night, the Browns had an offer on the table at about $7.5 million. They were the only team at that point willing to go that high for Mitch, but it was still very early on in the process. Things change as you get into today, as you can see how things are happening fast and furiously. So at some point today, it's also my understanding that the Browns may have pulled that offer off the table.
For what reason? Do you know?
I don't know for sure. Maybe because he wasn't accepting it right away, and maybe they figured that if you're not going to take it, and again, this offer was there since last night, maybe the feeling was if you're not going to take our very nice offer of 7.5, too bad. So I don't know if this is posturing or if this is really the end of the road or how this is going to turn out. But I do know that as of last night, they were willing to go that high for Mitch, and I think it would be a shame at this point for those guys to get that close and for him to end up walking away. I mean, you know, at some point, you know, you just have to say, let's get this thing done and try to move on from here, especially now that they've lost Alex Mack. I think it's imperative that they try to get Mitch under wraps. But you know what? Hey, they might mean business now. They might, you know, they may have just said, that was it. That was our best offer, and if you don't want to take it, too bad.
So given that you said a couple of things that I want to kind of follow up on. Number one, you said that they offered 7.5 and that was the most anybody's there. So the market that, you know, everybody at the Combine was saying Schwartz was asking in the mid-9s, you're saying that market has not materialized for him.
Well, you know what? I actually ultimately, you know, got to the point where I was writing 8.5 is what he was hoping to end up with and still hoping to end up with.
Okay.
So for him, you know, he probably wanted to wait and get to today and see if anybody was going to go higher than that 7.5. And therefore, that's when the Browns probably said, you know what, that was our best shot. And if you don't want that from us, then, you know, too bad. So, you know, we'll have to see how it turns out. I mean, as of last night, no one was ready to get to that point, and you know, maybe they are today. So we'll have to see how this one turns out. But it, you know, it's kind of a shame because as of last night, they were close enough, I think, to be able to sort of make this one happen.
What percentage would you put it at right now that Mitchell Schwartz is a Brown in 2016?
You know, when I hear that they've pulled the offer off the table, that's when things can get a little ugly. So now I would probably say it's down to maybe 30%, 20-30%.
Okay.
And Mary Kay, what are you hearing in regards to Tashawn Gibson? You know, Nathan from a couple of his sources has said the interest level is extremely low. We've now seen, you know, George Ialoka go get $30 million to be retained by the Cincinnati Bengals. Is there any buzz about Tashawn Gibson? Because obviously another safety ranked ahead of him, both Reggie Nelson and Eric Weddle still readily available on the market as well.
Yeah, you know what? There's been very, very little information and little buzz about Tashawn. It is a very strange thing. It's a slow market, like you said, for the safeties. I mean, I hear good things about Tashawn from people in the league. They like him. I think some people are a little bit concerned about the injury factor, and you know that might be a little bit of the issue here. But it is surprising to me that Tashawn hasn't been scooped up yet and that we're not hearing anything about a team willing to just come in here and take him away. So, you know, the longer that goes, you know, maybe the Browns do retain a chance to try to keep him.
Have you heard the Browns linked to anybody in this process other than their guys?
You know what? I'm really not, except for the fact that I know that they did look into Stephen Wisniewski, the center from Jacksonville.
Yep.
It's been very, very quiet in terms of who else they might be looking at. I know they did not offer a contract to Mohamed Sanu, There was nothing there. In terms of Marvin, I heard that they came in early with kind of a lower offer, nothing really too aggressive or serious, to the point where Marvin Jones felt that, you know, that this was a place he was going to end up. So I think that didn't go really anywhere because of that number, supposedly. So other than that, I really haven't heard of too many names. So they really might just be kind of waiting for that secondary market where you can find a few holes, you know, fill a few holes here and there at a cheaper price.
And Mary Kay, does this at all come at a surprise to you? Because I believe, you know, reading between the lines of Sashi Brown, Jimmy Haslam, and Hugh Jackson's, you know, their opportunities to speak to the media, and understanding what we're going to do. The Cleveland Browns have never, even given the amount of money that we have in cap space, have never been that big, you know, day one, day two player in free agency. Does this come as a surprise to you at all that we're just kind of letting some of these bigger names roll out? Fans are going to be disgruntled, but ultimately we're going to find those diamonds in the rough and not overpay for older, you know, used and abused talent.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the thing that they have done somewhat in the past, and something that, you know, that Ray Farmer did do some of, and that was go out and get the Dwayne Bowes and some of the guys that were on the back nine of their career, and, you know, they got a lot of money. And that's something that this regime didn't want to do. Now, one name that I did hear, it did not make any sense to me whatsoever, was, you know, Pac-Man. Not that he didn't fit the profile. He did not,
right.
at the age of 32, he did not fit the profile. And the only reason why it may have made some kind of sense is because Hugh Jackson can work with him, has worked with him. They have a good relationship. But he's, you know what, they're not going out and signing 32-year-old guys that are looking for a lot of money. So at this point, I doubt that will happen unless Hugh just, you know, goes to Sashi and says, look, I have to have somebody to shut down one half of the field or we're not going to be able to win any football games. So I highly doubt that will happen. But just because of the Hugh connection, there was at least a little something there.
What do you make, or have you heard anything? Jason Lockenfora right now just tweeting out a two-parter, and it echoes a sentiment from Jason Cole saying, issue with Browns isn't not spending money. Free agency is fool's gold. It's more the tenor of talks and how they're being perceived by agents. And pulling an offer with a player who had played out his rookie deal doesn't help with their perception problems. Lots of grumbling. Have you heard anything like that from around the league right now?
Yes, I'm hearing that there is lots of grumbling. That's exactly the way that it was put to me. Lots of grumbling amongst the players and amongst the agents. But, you know, that's what happens when you're not getting the big money that you're expecting to get and you're not going back with the team that you may have wanted to go back to. But I am definitely hearing the same thing.
All right. We'll see what happens with the Browns, Mary Kay. We'll certainly keep it up to date on your Twitter at Mary Kay Cabot for the very latest as this ends up happening with the Browns and we see what happens here as free agency hasn't even opened. Oh, actually, before I let you go, the other thing that might or might not happen today, since it doesn't seem like the Browns are going to be signing anybody, Johnny Manziel. Is it happening today or 4 o'clock going to come and go without Johnny being released?
Well, I'm voting for it not to happen today because there's enough going on with all the other free agents that it would be nice to not have to deal with that today. But, of course, it very well could happen. I mean, it's just for them, it's just a matter of actually pulling the trigger on it and being done with it. So it could happen today. If it doesn't happen today, it's only because they are so busy and tied up with other things in free agency that he's on the back burner today and they either just don't get to him or they might want to give it, you know, just a day or two to see if anybody would come through with a really late conditional pick.
All right. Thank you very much, Mary Kay. We will certainly keep it tuned for all that and the latest on the Browns. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
All right. So, Matt, as we talked about, Jason Lockenfora now saying that there's a lot of grumbling out there. If agents are grumbling, it seems to me they're grumbling because the Browns aren't willing to overpay for their players.
Correct.
That's
the fool's gold that he references in his tweet.
Yeah. That seems to me a pretty, like, ridiculous, I don't know. That seems like I don't know.
And I mean, and you know what it is?
Agents are grumbling. Why aren't you giving my guys more than they want?
Right. And it's just our ability to stick to our guns and find a fair market value for someone and make that offer.
Right. Now, if the number really is 7.5 for Alex Mack, I would like to see that get done. I would. Mitchell Schwartz, I'm sorry. Alex Mack is gone. Yes, Mitchell Schwartz. I would like to see that get done. You are listening to 850 KNR, ESPN 850 KNR Cleveland. There you go. Legal ID. You like that, Gibbs? Is that strong? That's great. You are listening to ESPN 850 WKNR Cleveland. Was that better? All right. Should I do it one more time? In case people are curious. What did you think about what you just heard there from Mary Kay Cabot? What do you think about the comments from Jason Lock and Four? Agents grumbling to me is not an issue.
That's not a good start.
Is it, though? Why would agents be grumbling unless people aren't just bending and giving agents what they want?
That is true. But there's always two sides to it. But there seems to be a lot of voices on Twitter right now saying the same thing. So interested to see how this is going to continue to develop over these next few hours.
It certainly will be an interesting few hours for the Cleveland Browns. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. We'll take our break here in hour number two. We'll come back with more of CBD.